Have not. If you're already a sustaining member, why don't you, like, you know, bump it up a couple dollars a month, bump it up 25 cents a month, and you can, it would be an amazing difference for us. 877-500-5266. Whatever you do, however you give, that's your concern and certainly your decision, but the important thing is to do it, to call 877-500-5266. KBOO.FM, or come on down to 20 Southeast 8th and check us out.
That's right. If you come down in person, we'll be happy to give you a tour of the station. You can meet some of our program hosts. We can show you around. You could sign up to become a volunteer. All of the voices you hear on the air, by the way, are volunteers. Lynn is a volunteer. Mm-hmm. I'm a volunteer. And there are a lot of different ways to volunteer in Portland. One of the ways is the most obvious that you hear is to host a program. But there's also Janet in our air room who's running the board for us and being a sound engineer. Lynn is on our board of directors. Directors, mm-hmm. which is a huge time commitment. Thank you so much, Lynn, for all that you do for us.
You're welcome.
And there are lots of other ways that you can give of your time as well as your money. Right now, that's right. Right now, you know, we are asking for your money. We are definitely doing that. But there are a lot of different ways to become involved. All we need to do is hear from you, and we'd be happy to tell you all about it. 877-500-5266. And Lynn mentioned before that the amount that you value KBOO is up to you. Obviously, we can't tell you how much you value the programming you hear here. Only you know that. But I will tell you that if you become a member at the $60 level, you can receive a copy of Ellen Brown's book, The Public Bank Solution.
We've got one left.
We've only got one copy left. A $60 membership is just $5 a month. That's just 16 cents a day. Don't you think that a book about public banking is worth 16 cents a day? And after you read it, you could loan it to a friend, or you could donate it to your library, or you could just tell everybody you know, and we could form a public bank here, and we could get rid of all of that annoying, you know, conventional banking
bank
that's lining the pockets of gazillionaires instead of putting our money to work for us. But we do need to hear from you right now. 877-500-5266 or online at KBOO.FM. We do have a goal for this show, which is a $600 goal, and we're a little ways from meeting that goal, but we know with your help we can get there. But we do need to hear from you now. Now is the time. Pick up your phone. 877-500-5266. Back to Ellen Brown.
So it could be done. You know, you could get money from your pension funds. You could get it. You may have to change some rules, but if you're a charter city, I think you, or county, I think you're allowed to do that. And then there's the constitutional issue. The California Constitution, most state constitutions say something like, public funds shall not be lent for private purposes. Now, that has been construed to mean that you can't have a publicly owned bank, as if putting your money in that bank and then the bank will lend out the public funds, and that's not allowed. But if that's really what it means, when you put your funds in Bank of America, they do the very same thing. They're going to lend it out. Either they're lending out public funds, or they've got the money, they own the money, and you've got an IOU, which is, that's what the law is, that when you put your money on deposit in a bank, you've lent money to the bank, and the bank owns the money now. So as soon as you put your money into Bank of America, you've lent them money, the same as putting it in your own public bank. So I don't think that law makes sense, but I know somebody was mentioning a legal opinion that went on for, I don't know, it was a very long legal opinion saying the reverse. I mean, there seems to be this concern. So the San Francisco Deputy City Attorney came out with this letter opinion saying that it wasn't a problem if you're a charter city or a charter county. So I'll read it. He said, this is Thomas J. Owen, San Francisco Deputy City Attorney. A court would likely conclude that California Government Code Section 23007 does not cover San Francisco because the city is a chartered city and county. Similarly, a court would likely conclude that Article 16, Section 6 of the state constitution, which limits the power of the state legislature to give or lend the credit of cities or counties, does not apply to the city. A court would likely then determine that neither those laws nor the general limitations on expending city funds for a municipal purpose bar the city from establishing a municipal bank. A court would likely conclude that the city may own stock in a municipal bank and spend city money to support the bank's operation if the city appropriated funds for that purpose and the operation of the bank served a legitimate municipal purpose. So that seems pretty clear. We now have 20 U.S. states that have introduced legislation of one sort or another for a state-owned bank. California was one of them, and it had a bill that passed both houses of the legislature, but Jerry Brown didn't sign it. And his argument was that we already had a banking committee and we had too many committees and we didn't need another one and that we could do this in-house. But, of course, we haven't heard any more about it since then. But it did pass both houses of the legislature, which is pretty remarkable. People say, well, North Dakota is got oil, it's a small state, they set it up 100 years ago, it's agricultural, it's not like us, you know, we could, even though they did it, we can't do it. So for that reason, I wrote my book, The Public Bank Solution, where I look globally and historically at other public banking models. Well, it turns out, I was shocked to see myself, that 40% of banks globally are publicly owned. These are largely in the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, which house 40% of the global population and which all escaped the credit crisis. Russia went down for a little bit, but they came back up. So there have been two recent banking crises globally, the 2008 one and then the 1998 one, the Asian crisis. And after both of those, public banking has experienced a resurgence. And this is for several reasons, but one is that they're safer. I just wrote an article about Costa Rica. 80% of deposits in Costa Rica are in publicly owned banks. The IMF has come in and the U.S. has come in and tried to lean on them to privatize their banks, and that people just, they want their public banks because they're very safe. The little private banks keep going bankrupt and the people lose their money. And so they've all rushed to these public banks. The public banking system was set up in 1949 when there was a revolution. There was a civil war, and the winner of the civil war knew that if he didn't, they were, at that time, Costa Rica was desperately poor. It was the poorest country in the region. And this rich coast is what Costa Rica means. It was a misnomer, apparently, they saw the women with wearing gold, and they thought there was gold there, but there wasn't. There was nothing there to speak of. So in 1949, the winner of the Civil War, he nationalized many industries, and one of them was the banking industry. And this worked really well. He started funding everything in sight. They had got a lot of money for the government. I mean, it seems to me that if you want to escape paying taxes, what you need to do is allow your government to make some money. And one really viable business they could go into right off the top is banking. So that's what they did. And there was an attempted, I think there were two attempted coups and one attempted assassination, partly from the military. So he just got rid of the military. Well, you can see right there how much money that would save if you didn't have for us, it would save like half our tax bill. So then he had all this extra money that he could put into. They still have an excellent medical system, covers everybody, excellent education system that covers everybody. And they were rated something like the happiest country in the world, happiest people in the world. Anyway, the public banks lend countercyclically. They lend when other banks are pulling in. When they're afraid to lend, you can see charts where as the private banking lending shrinks, the public banking lending goes the other way. And there are actually studies that show that they're less corrupt. People think, well, the government will be corrupt, you know, so it'll be a corrupt bank. But public banks are actually less corrupt. It's harder to be corrupt in a public bank. You've got a mandate to serve the public. If you put right in your charter that you want full accountability, full transparency, and a mandate to serve the public, obviously, that bank is going to be more accountable and more transparent than a Wall Street bank, which doesn't have such a mandate. They're also more efficient, and they're also, surprisingly, slightly more profitable, which is surprising because they're not actually trying to be profitable. I mean, they're trying to serve the public. So when the government owns the bank, the Government guarantees are built in. You don't have to worry about FDIC insurance. The government is the bank, so they obviously back the bank. Credit goes where it's needed by the public and the community. Interest returns to the public, and you have a sustainable system where the bank profits feed the economy rather than feeding off it. And I'm president of the Public Banking Institute, and we have a lot of information on our website about public banking and about different ways you can tap in, et cetera. And these are my two books on the subject, and my blog is at ellenbrown.com, and I've got over 200 articles on banking-related subjects there that I wrote, and a bunch of interviews. So that's all.
That was Ellen Brown. She spoke in December 2013 in Mendocino County, California. Ellen Brown is the author of The Public Bank Solution, a global survey of the current state of public banking and an intriguing history of its venerable past. It also covers public banking models spawned by depression and war, making clear all along how a matter so obscure to many, the management of the financial system and the money supply, can affect every aspect of our lives. The economist of sustainable development and author Hazel Henderson wrote the foreword to The Public Bank Solution. She said, "This book is about understanding the politics of money creation, credit allocation, and how democracies can and must regain control over today's global casino."
All right. Well, I know that you guys have enjoyed that program by Ellen Brown, because that last copy of her book, The Public Bank Solution, has gone. But that doesn't mean you can't still show your support for this unique programming by calling us here at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm. You know, we bring you this special programming as a way of saying thank you to you for all of your support over the year, and thank you for sticking with us during the membership drive. But we also do need to hear from you. There are a lot of great volunteers sitting waiting to take your call, and we want to hear those phones ring, and they want to hear those phones ring, and now's the time. 877-500-5266. And just in case you're bummed out about not getting that copy of the book, we do have other thank you gifts for you. We have another book by Richard Wolff called Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism. This is also for a $60 minimum membership, retail value of $15. This is a new historical vista opening before us in this time of change. Wolff writes in this compelling new manifesto for a democratic alternative based on workers directing their own workplaces. I mean, that's what we're all about here at KBOO, you know, local ownership of media, the people who run the station are the people who have a say in what happens at the station. And when you become a member of KBOO, you get to not only give us your support financially, but you get to become a member of our board, if you like, and help us with governance. You get to come in and learn how to produce radio and become a volunteer and give us something of your time and your expertise. And you get to avail yourself of all the great teaching and classes that are here so that you can learn how to produce quality radio of your own. It's really a win-win. All you need to do is pick up the phone and find out all about it. 877-500-5266. You know, it's really easy to become a member. There are a lot of different ways to become a member, and one of the most popular is our sustaining membership. We recommend beginning a minimum membership of $60. That's $5 a month. We can set that up for you with an electronic funds transfer through your checking account. It's safe. It's secure. You don't have to remember to send us money every month. It just happens automatically. Our volunteers are standing by to explain all of that to you. If that doesn't appeal to you, you can become a member by putting it on your credit card. You can become a member by sending us a check. You can become a member by coming in with a fistful of cash and visiting us in person at 20 Southeast 8th, just between Burnside and Ankeny, in the hippest part of inner Southeast Portland. But we do need to hear from you. Now is the time. 877-500-5266.
That's 877-500-KBOO. And you know, we'd like to thank restaurants who have
given their of their energy and food for our hungry volunteers today. Cassidy's at 1331 Southwest Washington Street, and Cabezon at 5200 Northeast Sacramento. Thank you very much. Another thing that you could get by Richard Wolf if you want to go out on a limb with a $90 minimum donation is Capitalism Hits the Fan. Richard Wolf has been on KBOO many, many a time talking about this. It's a great chronicle that Capitalism Hits the Fan is one economist's growing alarm and insights as he watched from 2005 onwards the economic crisis build, burst, and then dominate world events. The argument here differs sharply from most other explanations offered by politicians, which, of course, is what we specialize here at the News and Public Affairs Department in KBOO. We give you the view seldom heard, and everybody here does actual research, and we know how to do investigative reporting. We actually do classes in teaching you how to be an investigative reporter here. It's a dying art, but we believe in it here at KBOO. 877-500-5266, or if you are at work and you just don't want to, or for the shy people, kboo.fm, click donate now. That's a good one. But I just think this time of day, maybe it's lunch or whatever, come on down to check out the digs here at 20 Southeast 8th. It's a great big mural in front of the place. You can't miss it. And as Liz has been saying, we are in the hippest part of town. Not so when
totally
we bought
hip.
Not so when we bought it, but oh, it seems to have happened. In fact, one day Fred Armiston was standing outside, and I kept trying to beckon him in, but it just wasn't working that day.
Yeah, but we're the ones who make it hip because we've been here the longest.
And we certainly have. 877-500-5266 is the number. You know you're going to do it. You might as well do it now. Help us over with our goal for this program that's just happened, and pretty soon we're going to have Joseph Gallivan on talking with Dawson Carr of the Portland Art Museum about Venice, the Golden Age of Art and Music. It's a new exhibition because that's this. We have arts here in News and Public Affairs. Arts, I tell you. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Get it out of the way right now, and that way you can listen to the whole show that Joseph Gallivan is going to do on Art Focus, which will be coming up at 11:30.
I just want to remind all of you that over 80% of our funding comes directly from individual listeners like you. We receive no government funding of any kind, neither state nor local nor federal. We do receive some local business support, but really the bulk of our support comes directly from you, and so that's why it's so important that you not waste another moment and show your support for KBOO. Call 877-500-5266.
That's right, and call it now. As Liz says, if Liz tells you to do this, y'all
do it.
Need to do it.
Do it now.
877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. It's an easy number to call. Get your little phones out of your pocket and just see, just like that person's doing there. Or you can go to kboo.fm. Back to our programming. Janet.
We're going back to TUC Radio featuring public banking proponent Ellen Brown on bypassing Wall Street.
Ellen Brown mentioned in passing San Francisco Supervisor John Avalos. He's one of the strong proponents of a public bank for San Francisco. In turn, the efforts of San Francisco to set up a public bank can be exemplary for other cities, towns, or counties in California and beyond. John Avalos spoke at the June 2013 Public Banking Conference. It was held at the Dominican University in San Rafael, California. Avalos had just received a legal opinion by San Francisco Deputy City Attorney Thomas J. Owen. He wrote that restrictions on the operation of a public bank would not affect San Francisco. Here is some of what Supervisor Avalos said.
Just this last couple months, we got great news from the city attorney on our pushback on what their opinion about whether we could actually do municipal banking in San Francisco. And they found that because we're a chartered city, that we actually have the ability to actually move forward with an idea of using our public dollars in a banking institution. I believe the sky's the limit. And it's not just San Francisco. Other chartered cities as well, like Los Angeles, the city of Oakland, the city of Santa Rosa, and about 100 other chartered cities are able to do this as well. And so the question is, how do we, you know, build it? How do we get the money into a financial institution that's publicly owned? And what does it do? Our goals around creating a municipal bank, ultimately we want to be able to fund economic development projects, affordable housing projects. We also have an effort to build municipal power in San Francisco, and a bank could be a way to actually move that forward as well. We also want to look at our own municipal bond financing based on the LIBOR experience that a lot of municipalities have had around the country. How can we actually create our own financial tools so we're not reliant on the sketchy financial institutions that come out of Wall Street? We want to also be able to support a lot of households that are dealing with the mortgage crisis, especially households in my district where defaults are pretty high, that we could actually have our own ways of supporting households, that we can actually maintain our wealth in our single family homes, our working class communities. Our wealth is often in our homes, so how can we use our financial institution, our public finance institution, to help households prevent foreclosures? We also want to look at small loans that could be available for small businesses and make sure that we are increasing the capacity of credit unions and community development financial institutions in San Francisco. And overall, we want to be able to create alternative economic systems, ones that can be publicly owned and self-reliant and offer greater self-determination for the people of the city, and also be an example for cities around the country and learn from other cities around the country how we can actually move forward and create our own financial institutions that will be publicly owned and be managed by public and actually really be based on democratic principles. And so really excited about what we're doing with that.
That was applause for John Avalos, member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He spoke on June 3, 2013, at the Public Banking Conference. You can follow the unfolding news and get information on how to set up a public bank on the website of the Public Banking Institute at publicbankinginstitute.org. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to free weekly podcasts. On tucradio.org, you can also order a CD or a DVD of this talk by Alan Brown, or you can call 1-707-463-2654.
And that was TUC Radio. We've been listening to a special program featuring Ellen Brown talking about the possibility of establishing a public bank in Mendocino County, Northern California. And if they can do it there, we can do it here. Just like we can do our, we can keep this kind of programming on the air, but only with your help. And we need you to call 1-877-500-5266, because this kind of programming doesn't come for free. It comes for free in the sense that you can turn on your radio or click on our website and listen, and nobody's going to send you a bill. But it does cost us something to bring you this kind of programming. It costs us $84 an hour, which is actually an incredibly, incredibly inexpensive bill for such fantastic community on alternative radio. But you know, somebody has to pay those costs. And right now, we're asking that you do your part. 877-500-5266. If you're listening to us online at kboo.fm, click on the Donate Now jar in the upper right-hand corner and become a member that way. If you're listening to us on the radio, go to our website, kboo.fm, click on the jar, become a member. Now's the time. Now's the time for you to show your support for the amazingly unique and varied news and public affairs programming that we have on KBOO. Just as an example of that uniqueness, we've been talking about media monopolies and capitalism and alternative banking. And now we're going to switch gears entirely and talk about the recently opened exhibit at the Portland Art Museum, which is called... Venice, the Golden Age of Art and Music. And what's really great about this exhibit, and we're going to hear more about it, is that it's not just paintings and it's not just visual arts, but there's actually going to be a lot of live music performed by amazing artists here in Portland. And we're going to be hearing from Joseph Gallivan in just a moment. And we know that you're excited about that. And we need to hear from you. Show your excitement with a little bit of money from your wallet, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm.
Absolutely. And you know, another thing we have is we have some tickets to give away for Chris Ware in conversation with Chip Kidd. Not a giveaway, I'm sorry. We are selling those tickets for $75. That's a $75 has to be a credit card or come on down with some cash. It's a $64 retail value. So it's quite a deal. He's going to be at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall tonight. And I'm going to tell you more about that later. 877-500-5266, and now we're going to go to Art Focus.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor a talk, Struggling to Win, Chilean Anarchists Building Popular Power. The talk by three Chilean anarchist organizers is on Wednesday, February 19th at 7 p.m. at PCC Cascade Campus in the Terrell Hall Building in room 122. Terrell Hall is located at North Jessup and Kirby Streets. This event is brought to you by the Institute for Anarchist Studies, the Hella 503 Collective, and Portland Central America Solidarity Committee, and is hosted by PCC's Q Club. That's Struggling to Win, Chilean Anarchists Building Popular Power, Wednesday, February 19th at PCC Cascades Terrell Hall, room 122. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. This week our guest is Dawson Carr. Mr. Carr is the Portland Art Museum's Janet and Richard Geary Curator of European Art. He's here to talk about Venice, the Golden Age of Art and Music, which opened last Saturday and is at the Portland Art Museum until May the 11th. Welcome, Dawson. It's lovely to have you back again at KBOO.
Thank you, Joseph. It's great to be here.
This show, Venice, is one of those big shows that's come. It's come from Montreal. It's not going anywhere else in the States.
That's right. It's just Montreal and Portland.
It's a big kind of concept show about a certain time in Venice and also about music in Venice. So what era does it cover, and why does it focus on that area?
Well, it covers the last 300 years of the great, most serene Republic of Venice. It begins about 1500 and ends with the fall of the Republic to Napoleon in 1797. And this was a period when the great commerce of Venice, the great military power, it ruled the Mediterranean for centuries and was the gateway between Europe and Asia. And this period is when all of that is coming to an end. And it's a period of economic, political, and military decline, but a great golden age in art and music. Venice was a real music city, like Portland, and its artists were not only, many of them, amateur musicians themselves, but also had close family members who played or sang. And the great love of music in Venice is reflected in its art. We have lots of images of musicians and concerts and the subjects, the same subjects that opera composers would treat. And this reflects this great culture. It's not unique to Venice to have these images of music, but there's a huge preponderance of them in Venice that really shows off this city's love of the art of music.
The schools and hospitals had they're not what we think of schools and hospitals. They had a very peculiar relation to what went on in them.
Yes, the scuole, as they were called, literally schools, were actually confraternities. And they were founded with social purpose, some to help plague victims, others to help victims of this, that, and the other. And for religious devotion. But they became great, great institutions and were renowned for their concerts. The ospedali, literally hospitals, were hospitals helping the sick and indigent, but were also orphanages. And in these orphanages, the young women in particular, who were cloistered, were taught music. And in several cases, particularly the Ospedale della Pietà, it became a great conservatory of music, renowned throughout Europe. And that's where Antonio Vivaldi was an instructor, and it was for the orphans at the Ospedale that Vivaldi wrote many of his concerti.
So these orphans would be performing in as a choir?
There were instrumental ensembles as well as vocalists. They performed in churches behind screens. You couldn't see them. And one of the marvelous things that we have in the exhibition is Giambattista Tiepolo's sketch for the ceiling of the church of the Ospedale della Pietà, which shows a coronation of the Virgin, and it's accompanied by this great ensemble of instrumentalists and singers, angels in the sky overhead that one could gaze upon, because one could not actually see the singers and instrumentalists.
And that's a sketch of a ceiling done by the person who's going to paint the ceiling, or done afterwards by somebody else?
No, this is very much, in all likelihood, it's Tiepolo's presentation sketch, the sketch that he presented to the Ospedale as a model for what he would do. And then, of course, it served in turn as a basis for executing the fresco itself. The key here is that it was executed in fresco, which is painted into plaster, and that doesn't fare well in the damp environment of Venice. And actually, the sketch is ravishing and much greater than the finished product today.
Mm-hmm. And there is a picture of Tintoretto's daughter.
Yes.
What's her relationship to music?
Well, Tintoretto taught his daughter Marietta to paint. She's very well known for her portraits of great gentlemen and ladies. And she does this self-portrait